One of the things that frightens people like me, those of us who stand in front of congregations and lead in worship week by week, one of the things that frightens us is that the people who come to church and hear us really do listen to us. And that's scary. Right, Don? That's scary. Because some of the things that we say come back to us days or weeks or even years later. And it's an awesome responsibility to address the people of God and to know that they're listening. Right, Lucretia? And it's scary. It is a scary thing for us. Well, last week, when Lucretia was talking to us about the woman at the well, I was listening. And one of the things that Lucretia said has been rolling around in my mind all week. And I have been wrestling with it and thinking about it and grappling with it. And I wanted you to hear it again, because that's where we're going to begin today. Leonard Sweet, who is the dean of the theological school at Drew University, said this. And Lucretia quoted this for us last week. He said, "Our society is experiencing a greater spiritual hunger than our nation has ever seen. But the problem is that people are not turning to the church as a place to find answers and a solution to that hunger. Instead, they are following after gurus and self-help books and the New Age movement and all those places where you can custom design your own God to have the God that you need at this time in your life. Unfortunately, they're not going after the true God." Well, that's what Leonard Sweet said. And you know what I've been thinking about? What would it be like to design your own God? Do you ever think about that? What would God look like and act like and be like if you had a chance to design God the way you wanted God to be? Wouldn't that be interesting? I want to encourage you today after church, when you're having roast preacher for lunch, that talk about this one. Think about this and talk about what would God look like if I got to design God the way I wanted God to be? What would that be like? Probably be a Steelers fan. Maybe a Duke fan. Well, I thought of several things. Surprise. I thought of several things that probably God would look something like this if I designed God. If I designed God for myself and I can make God to be the way I wanted God to be, I think I would want a God who controls everything, who makes all the decisions and who causes everything that happens to happen. A God who is always in control. You see, the advantage of that is that it takes me off the hook. I don't have any responsibility then for the shape of my own life or my own sin or the shape of the world that I'm living in. If God's responsible for it all, I get off scot-free. So I'd want a God who controls everything so I wouldn't be responsible for myself or anything else. If I got to design God, I would want a God who doesn't judge anything and tells me not to make judgments. It's amazing how many times I hear folks say that in church, that God instructs us, the Scripture tells us that we're not to judge, to make judgments or to judge others. Well, folks, the Scripture doesn't say that. Doesn't say that at all. Doesn't say that we're not to make judgments or to make judgments about others. Doesn't say that, but we want it to say that. We want God to be that way because it lets us off the hook and makes life easier for us. If I don't have to make any judgments, I just flow along with the way things are and blame God for everything. We want a God who patiently comforts us and doesn't judge us or make any demands of us. If I got to design God, I think God would come out a good bit like that. We want to design God so that God is one who makes our lives easy when we follow Him, who solves all the problems and makes things smooth. And we want a God, I want a God, who gets angry at the things I get angry at. And uses all His power to right all the wrongs that I think should be righted. And that way, if I get angry and I work my anger out violently, it's okay because God's violent too. That's what some of what God would look like, I think, if I got to design God? What would God look like if you got the God you needed or wanted? You know, I think that's what James and John were doing in the 20th chapter of Matthew. They were trying to design God, to design Jesus to be the way they wanted him to be. They were trying to get him to do what they wanted him to do, the right things that they perceived to be the right things. And so, you know, when you want something from somebody, when you really want something, you know, what is the surefire way of getting, say your teacher in school, or your boss at work, or whatever, you really want something from, what's the surefire way to get it? You send your mother to ask for you. That's what James and John did, right? They sent their mother. And if you read the text carefully, she was trying to structure it so that Jesus couldn't say no, because it says that the mother of James and John went to Jesus, and it says she knelt down in front of him. Oh my goodness, she was serious. This was something big, and Jesus must have thought, here it comes. This is going to be big. So she knelt down in front of him, and what did she want? She wanted that her sons would sit at Jesus' right and his left when he came to control his kingdom. Well, you know what that's about, don't you? That's about power. She wanted her sons to be in power. She wanted her sons to be Secretary of Defense and Secretary of State in Jesus' administration. Or maybe a Vice President and Attorney General, however, whatever you think is best. But that's what she wanted for her sons. And if you read carefully, you'll notice that Jesus did not deny her request. But he said, you don't know what you're asking for. James and John and their mother thought Jesus' kingdom was about power. It was about controlling the world and forcing others to do things your way, at least when it came to Israel's enemies. But that idea was Jesus the way they wanted him to be, not Jesus the way he really was. And his response to their request was not nearly what they expected. Indeed, your sons will share in my kingdom, Jesus said. But it is a bitter cup to drink. It is a cup of service and sacrifice, quite different from the seats of privilege and power that they are seeking. Whoever among you wishes to be great must be your servant, and whoever wishes to be most powerful among you must be your slave. Just as the Son of Man, just as I came, Jesus said, just as I came not to be served, but to serve and to give my life as a ransom for many. The woman at the well had the same problem. You remember from last week? She was amazed that Jesus spoke to her. How many of us, if we were designing our own God, how many of us would design a God that breaks down racial barriers and that breaks down gender barriers and that breaks down ethnic and national barriers? How many of us would design God to be like that? But that's precisely who Jesus was and what he calls upon us to be. And then Jesus offered her living water, confusing to her, to say the least, not what she would have expected from the Messiah. When he told her that he was the Messiah, she entered a discussion about politics and power. Confusing to her. Then, just as Jesus was confusing to James and John, this is not the Messiah that we expect to encounter. This Jesus does not represent God in the ways that we think God is or that God should be. Jesus is who Jesus is, not who we want him to be. A life of following Jesus is not what we think it should be, but it's what Jesus needs it to be. Discipleship is not about everything in our life going the way we want it to. It's about bringing God's great dream to reality. Jesus warned us that it would not always feel good, nor would it turn out the way we wanted it to, nor would it always be safe and comfortable and clean and sensible and fair, this kingdom business in which we are engaged. Reverend Randall Bell, pastor in the middle of the country, tells a powerful story about a pastor who stood in court beside a member of his congregation, an individual who had been out with the boys one night. And when he was out with the boys, he had too much to drink. And as he was driving home on the rain-soaked, foggy roads, he went around a corner just a little too quickly, and all of a sudden, without seeing anything, he heard. He heard the sickening clash of metal against metal and breaking glass. And two young people lay dead in the street. They had been thrown from their motorcycle. He was charged with manslaughter and driving under the influence. And so he stood in court, trembling, after days of testimony, his pastor by his side. And the judge was about to speak. It could mean years in prison, the rest of his life perhaps, loss of his job and poverty for his family. The testimony was over and the judge was prepared. But before I tell you what he said, take just a moment and think what you would want that judge to say. What would you expect or hope the verdict would be in court that day? Well, this is what he said. The test for drunkenness was not properly administered. The motorcycle had no proper lights. The jury was ordered to render a not guilty verdict for those reasons. All that was ominous and foreboding was now gone, and he was a free man. The court had declared him not guilty. His family embraced him, and they went on with their life, all because he had been declared innocent. And then Pastor Bell added these words to the story. "Now maybe this story," he said, "and the way it ended angers you because you hurt over those young people who lost their lives. But know this, you and I are that man. His story is our story. We are the ones who find ourselves standing, trembling before the judge, with no excuses, no explanations, waiting for him to speak. We are the ones who have broken the law, who have behaved badly, who have hurt others. We are the ones who have been negligent and self-centered. And when the judge speaks, he declares us innocent. Not because we're good, not because we've done right or been faultless or fair. We are innocent because Jesus takes our place and pays our penalty and serves our time and receives our sentence. Whoever wishes to be great among you must be your servant, and whoever wishes to be strong among you must be your slave. Just as I came, not to be served, but to serve and to give my life as a ransom for many." If I had the duty of constructing God the way God really is, it may not look fair to you. It may not look just to me, but merciful and generous beyond my ability to comprehend. James and John were a mess. They did not do themselves proud in this interchange with Jesus in Matthew 20, because they tried to force Jesus to conform to their own image of who Jesus should be. They tried to force God into a box of their own choosing so that God would fit the parameters of their own minds and spirits. And because James and John did so, there are many negative things that can be said about them. They were nakedly ambitious and proud. They wanted and they believed they deserved places of honor in Jesus' kingdom. They were ignorant and insensitive. After all, their request for places of power in Jesus' kingdom came right after Jesus told them of his own impending suffering and death. But there's one positive thing you can say about James and John, and this is their legacy. This is what they left for us. They believed in Jesus. Here was a poor, homeless, persecuted carpenter. And yet James and John believed that Jesus was a king. They didn't understand everything about him, but they believed that he would conquer the world and they were going to stay with him no matter what. There's a lot that James and John didn't do right, just like you and me. But this one thing carried them through, just as it will carry you and me through. They were committed to Jesus, heart and soul, muscle and sinew. They believed in Jesus. Maybe that's a good place for us to start too.